It's really nice to be here and part of this panel. Obviously, we're here to learn about GIS methods, but the other thing that connects all of these presentations together is how GIS can be used to shape policy, and that's something that I'm particularly interested in. Health policies work in part by changing environments, and if we're changing environments, GIS mapping and spatial analysis allows us to see the actual effects of policies or to test the presumed effects of policies, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. This is what I'm going to be showing you is the results of work that we've done at our center, as well as with partners at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And what I'm going to do in a few minutes is three things. I want to suggest what our policy question is, then show how we collected some GIS data to analyze that policy, and then how we use the results of that study to try to influence and shape policy the way we've seen here. And our area is in tobacco control. In 2009, President Obama signed the FSPTCA, the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act, which actually really dramatically changes the landscape for tobacco control in this country. It does a lot of things, but one of the things it allows us to do is do more regulation around marketing and promotion of tobacco products. Tobacco products, and cigarettes in particular, remain the most heavily marketed product in the world, and which means a lot of money is spent with advertising and promotion, price promotions, and so on. And most of that money is actually spent at the point of sale, meaning most of the tobacco industry spends more money right where cigarettes are sold. So that means in convenience stores. We talked about retailers earlier. This is the sort of thing that you'd see if you go to a typical gas station or corner convenience store. Outside, you see a lot of tobacco ads. And there's so many of them, sometimes we tune them out. But they're there, and they're promoting brands, they're promoting prices, and in particular, they're getting, they're getting kids to try cigarettes. We actually have a very strong scientific base now causally linking advertising and smoking. We've got this, I pulled out a couple things here. This is a recent article from Nicotine and Tobacco Research. But essentially, there's enough of a scientific link that we think that as a point of policy, the idea of restricting or banning tobacco advertising is a reasonable policy for us to consider. However, here's the catch. This is a table from the tobacco industry that's examining what would happen if a policy of restricting visible advertising within 1,000 feet of schools were implemented. And what you see here, is in a bunch of metropolitan centers across the United States, it looks like that policy would result in banning almost 100% of advertising. So here down in Manhattan, it looks like 95%. One of the things that they presented is that it's actually percent of land area affected. And this is what it looks like. The quality's not great because this comes from a legal document, but this is information that the tobacco industry is presenting to the courts, basically saying, look, if the FDA policy goes into effect, we can't advertise a legal product in all of New York. And I'm sure they say that's not fair, but what they really say is it's not constitutional. And in fact, the Supreme Court has agreed with them. They basically said in a recent case, the important sentence here is the last one in red, is that in order for this policy to be constitutional, it has to be more tailored. It can't result in a blanket ban of advertising. Well, when we started looking at this, we realized, well, this is essentially the tobacco industry making this argument, and public health really hadn't collected data in this area. So what we wanted to do in our study is collect some GIS data in particular to really examine the impact of the FSPTCA, and in particular the impact of the rule that would restrict outdoor visible advertising around schools and playgrounds. Right now, they are considering actually a range of boundaries, everything from 350 feet to 1,000 feet. So that's in particular what we wanted to look at is what would happen if the restriction boundary were smaller or larger. So our approach was pretty simple. What we did is we looked in Missouri and in New York, and we basically collected, we combined data on tobacco retailers and then used census data for school locations and also park locations. That's a little more complicated. I don't have time to go into that. But the idea is you've got a school perimeter, and when you have that information, you can construct an exact 1,000-foot boundary. That's the shaded blue area. A lot of states don't have actual perimeter data. Instead, they just have addresses of schools. And in that case, you have to do some sensitivity analysis. You actually go out a little further to do a circular boundary that would roughly correspond to what you get if you actually had perimeter data. Perimeter data is important because if this policy goes into effect, that's actually how you would mark it out. I mean, you don't take a yardstick, but you would go 1,000 feet out from the boundaries of the schools. So using this approach, we combined the retailer data and the census data, and we constructed some maps. Now, this map in Manhattan, you know, looks a little bit like what the tobacco industry is showing. Certainly, there's a very dense concentration of tobacco retailers. St. Louis looks a little different. And so keep that in mind as we continue. This is essentially the summary of our findings. And what we found is essentially the effects of the policy, not surprisingly, would vary by location, that is where you look in the country, and the size of the boundary. And what we found is, in fact, the 1,000-foot boundaries do capture more of the retailers than the smaller boundaries. That's not surprising. But what we also found is that, in particular, as the boundary got smaller, you see that in St. Louis City, the 350-foot boundary captures almost none of the tobacco retailers, less than 10%. Whereas in New York, we see it captures a large amount, 30%. The other thing to note is the tobacco industry data suggested that 95% of the land area would be affected. What we found is about a little less than 80% of retailers. That's actually the way you need to look at it. It's not land area. A policy affects retailers. Retailers would have to remove outdoor advertising. So you need to look at the actual retailers affected, not some sort of how much land is affected. And then when we looked, that previous table looked at city data, because we had better data for St. Louis City and County and New York City. This is what we found when we looked statewide, Missouri and New York. And what we essentially find is that statewide in New York, if we take a 1,000-foot boundary, you would affect about half of the retailers. And that's a lot, and that's actually what you want to have happen. Our view as scientists is that it doesn't raise First Amendment issues. It doesn't result in a blanket ban of advertising. It results in a tailored ban. The other thing is in Missouri statewide, it only affects 22%. The other thing that we are saying in our study is that sort of you don't want to create a policy for the nation based on Times Square, meaning, you know, a lot of the country looks very different from New York City, and you want a policy that's going to have public health impact around the whole country, and you don't want to use an argument about how this is a problem in New York, it's a problem in Chicago, when you need to look at the rest of the country. And so our recommendation essentially is 1,000 feet everywhere. And so that's our recommendation. With what we know about how many retailers are out there, and as this is based on some of Kurt Ribisol's work, on average there's 5 pieces of outdoor visible advertising at any retailer. It's actually, many retailers don't have any outdoor advertising, but others have a lot, but on average 5. And if you do the math, and looking at the figures that we found from Missouri and New York, if FDA adopted the 1,000-foot rule, that would result in removal of anywhere from about 500,000 to almost 2 million pieces of advertising. And part of it is to get a feel of what would really happen. And you know, we talk about clearing the air. It would remove this advertising, especially around schools, you know, where kids are spending a good part of their lives. The other thing we found is essentially the smaller boundaries, the ones that FDA are considering, are unlikely to have much of an effect, 350 feet or 500 feet. One of the things that's interesting about the tobacco industry is they have often supported health policies and tobacco control policies, but what you always find is the tobacco control policies they support are the ones that are not effective. And so if they're willing to support smaller boundaries, it's because they're not effective. So, you know, our GIS study, what we think we found is that keep the 1,000 feet because it'll be effective. It won't raise a constitutional issue, and look at it this way in terms of retailers, not land area. And so the last thing is we've tried to use this information. We've tried to disseminate it. The most important thing is we are able to respond to a request for comment that the FDA was having in this particular area. This is important. We need to collect good public health data and then not just publish it in scientific papers. That is, we need to inform policy, and because we just, a colleague of ours who's on the scientific advisory board for FDA has basically said, the people showing up at all of the meetings are representatives of the tobacco industry, and as public health advocates, we need to be there with good data. And so we were able to do that. We are also able to share this with the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, a New York Tobacco Control Program, and then we also did submit this for review. And actually, we were very happy. We found out 2 days ago that the paper was accepted by AJPM. So that was great. And I have no disclosures.
Thank you. Any questions? One or two questions? Yes.
Given what you just showed, the discrepancies between city numbers and state numbers, like New York City's a great example. So New York City was like 78% of retailers being excluded. It seems like the tobacco companies would still object to such high numbers in some of their biggest markets in the country. So my question is, why go for a one-size-fits-all buffer, like 1,000 meters or whatever? Why not population density?
Well, that's a great question. In fact, we started looking at that with these data. So instead of having one rule that applies, maybe in denser areas you can have sort of a smaller buffer, like in New York City. We actually analyzed that a little bit. So, like, what would it be like in rural areas if you had 1,000 feet and urban areas 500 feet? And it doesn't take much weakening of it before you totally lose the retailers. I think in principle, like a hybrid approach makes a lot of sense. One of the issues is implementation. This is complicated enough as it is, and states and communities are gonna have to implement it and enforce it. And you know, would a hybrid approach be that more complicated? But I actually think we might end up with that sort of approach where, especially in the dense urban areas, it's a different place. But it's a lot of people, but most of the rest of the country is not a dense urban area, and so we need to keep that in mind.
Any other questions?
You mentioned that the different areas are more effective. How would you haven't evaluated that it's effective?
Well, here by effective we mean the policy is designed, it's actually not designed to target smokers in any way. The FDA policy is meant to target pieces of visible advertising. And by effective we mean a policy that would actually remove visible advertising, and that's simply what we mean. The industry was overestimating the effect by looking at land area, and what we are trying to show is there's gonna have to be a sweet spot. So constitutionally, you can't ban it, but we want to have a strong policy that really would remove advertising around schools, and so that's what we mean by impact is probably a better word.
Thanks.